I can remember on many, many occasions my mother coming up and seeing me in my room and announcing to, I'm not entirely sure who, but announcing to someone, this place is a pigsty, how do you live like this? And of course, I'll look up, glance around the room, and it'll occur to me that maybe it's not exactly the way my mother wanted it to be, and I would shrug sheepishly, I really wouldn't worry too much about it. Then she'd leave, and then she'd come back, and go, why haven't you cleaned this yet? And I was always to point out that that's not actually what my mother said. What my mother said was the place was a mess. She didn't say she wanted it changed. And then, of course, I had to learn a very powerful lesson. If she says it's a mess, it means she wants it changed. And of course, then my German spirit broke in, and I would regularly point out to her that unless she actually said she wanted it cleaned, I was going to ignore it on purpose from there on in. So that was far more entertaining for me. I think about this sometimes, largely because I just like to drive my mother crazy. But no, more than that, I was thinking about the gospel. What we have here is this incredible moment at the very beginning, and I mean this at the very beginning, because Jesus is up to this point, while he's an adult, while he's invited to this wedding feast, while he has disciples, is largely nobody particular. He really is. He hasn't revealed his glory. He hasn't begun to express his messianic secret. He hasn't begun to reveal himself as God. He really is that carpenter from Galilee who has done some things in the synagogue. I mean, there's some people following him for that. You know, he is a rabbi, but there are lots of rabbis. That's not a particular standout moment yet. And he's invited to this wedding. I mean, and you get the impression lots of people are invited to this wedding because he and his disciples are invited and his mother's there. And you have all of these people there. And they run short of wine. And it's incredible because to this day, I still have no idea whether the mother of Jesus was actually involved in the planning stages or if she just was being a good Jewish mother and suddenly decided to get involved regardless of the fact that she was supposed to or not. And she goes to Jesus. And she doesn't tell him to do anything. She just says, they have no wine. Of course, there's that immediately veiled inference that there's supposed to be something that's supposed to be done about this. That by making this observation, by making this statement, she wants action taken. And I love the response. It's remarkable because in so many ways it is this great reminder. He looks at his mother, who has raised him, and says those heartwarming words. Woman, why is this my problem? I mean, I'm sure that's just what every mother wants to hear, just those encouraging words right there. How does your concern affect me? Why are you going to bring me into this problem? I mean, seriously, they have no wine. I don't see how this is a we have no wine problem. And yet there it is. And the thing that I absolutely love and is incredibly remarkable is that Mary shows her great faith. She doesn't tell him what to do. She doesn't tell him how to fix it. She doesn't say what he's supposed to do about it. She comes to him and she says, they have no wine. And his response is, it's not my job. And I love this because he does. He says, woman, I regularly want to ask my mother, when do I get to start calling her woman? I know, I'm just, you know, trying to make long-term plans here. You know, when is it that I get to call her woman? But she always says it's when I turn water into wine, so I have a little bit to go, but I'm working on it. You know, I'm still trying to get there. But you know, it's important to have life goals. So he's left with a task that he has no personal investment in. He's not supposed to begin yet. He says his hour hasn't come. It's not time to do these things. And yet here it is. There is this visible need, this challenge that has to be addressed, this genuine struggle that has to come into place. And our Blessed Mother makes her final words, not to Jesus, but to the servants. It's the last thing she says in all of Scripture. These are her closing words, her parting words to all of us. Do whatever he tells you. So simple, so direct, so beautiful. Do whatever he tells you. And there's something remarkable about it, because she's not even listening to his rebuff anymore. She's not even focused on the fact that he said no. She's none of that even concerns her. She says, do whatever he tells you. Which, granted, sounds like more like a hostage negotiation at times if you take it out of context, but really at the focus of it all is an invitation that whatever he says is going to be the best thing for him. And he can make it right if we respond to this invitation. And so it is. But now he's left holding the bag. He's left standing there trying to figure out what he's supposed to do. And I'm sure he's got a plan. I'm sure it's all in his mind. I mean, he is God. Don't underestimate it. But there's that moment. And I love this for so many reasons. Because I want you to think about exactly what Jesus asked the servants to do. He saw the 6 stone water jars, which I love this image in our church that depicts this exact gospel passage. But I'm telling you right now, there is no way that those stone jars hold 25 to 30 gallons apiece. So you have to think much larger on this scale. And they're not just water jars. These are washing jars. These are the ceremonial washing jars. They're the water used for bathing their feet. It's not exceedingly clean water in so many ways. And the source where they get it from it's well water, but trust me, it's not well water like we have well water. It's something far more underdeveloped, let's say. It's a little unremarkable in so many ways. It isn't considered drinking water for good reason. That's why they're drinking wine. And he says, fill them up to the brim with water. It's like he asked them to go fill up 6 bathtubs, by the way, in case you're wondering what this context would look like. He says, see those 6 bathtubs? Great. Go fill those with water. And they do. And the thing that's most amazing is they respond to him. He says, now go serve it to the head waiter. The guy who has to do quality control, the guy who is actually in charge of making sure that there's enough wine, that there's enough things going on, that all of the pieces are coming together, go serve it to the head waiter. And I can't imagine what it would be like to be one of those servants. You want me to what now? I'm going to take bath water and I'm going to go serve it to the head waiter. That sounds like a brilliant idea. You want to stand behind me while I get shot? But he does. And he takes it to the head waiter and the head waiter samples it and water becomes wine. This most remarkable reality where seemingly silly things, seemingly basic things, seemingly unimpressive, simple things achieve even greater glory, and a greater mystery of God is revealed. And it's remarkable because it isn't just wine. It isn't even just good wine. It's exceptional. God doesn't do it halfway. He takes these simple, ordinary actions, these simple things that we can do and engage in, and he makes them something far greater. He makes them something so much more impressive than anything ordinary. What does the head waiter say? He says, you know, usually we start with the good wine, and then, you know, when everyone's had a lot of fun, they switch to something a little easier that's cheaper and you can have a greater volume of. But you save the best for now. This remarkable, great gift. And it's incredible for all of us because if we truly consider within our lives that when we encounter the challenges within our lives, when we encounter the daily struggles that we go through, we need to come back to these words. This great invitation from our Blessed Mother says, do what he tells you to do. Because it may not seem like much. It may seem like ordinary, unimpressive, simple things. It may largely seem to be things that just sound a little off or a little weird. It's like, why am I filling this bathtub so I can serve it to wedding guests? That doesn't really make sense. But we engage in this and we follow through because at the very heart of it, if this is what we are invited to do, if this is what we are asked to do by God, we can receive amazing gifts. And the glory of God is revealed in it. We may engage in things that we can do every day that seem so very natural to us and don't seem like all of that big a concern, but if that is where our gifts lie, then so be it. St. Paul reminds us very eloquently, very clearly in his letter, he says so wonderfully so, he says, we don't all have the same gifts, but we can all live into the gifts of God and see him in those. You know, it's fascinating to me. I feel like I've had this mass a lot, probably because I was on TV this morning for it, which I filmed 2 weeks ago when I was in the prison on Thursday. And I had this mass there. I get very disoriented very quickly with this because I no longer remember what day it is, but what amazes me is that as I have reflected on this and heard this gospel over and over again in these leading weeks, it becomes clear to me that it continues to speak to us no matter what our circumstance. It was a terrible tragedy in Rock Falls. It really was. And it is an awful thing to those people we care about. But remarkably, even in these moments, this gospel speaks to us just as much as ever. And that clear, eloquent reminder that we are still invited to do what God asks of us, to live into our gifts, to respond to our call. And by doing so, we see amazing things.